Welcome to the Team Flower Podcast. My name is Kelly, and we are gathering today to inspire you in your work with flowers.
Hi, welcome to the Team Flower Podcast. This is Jesse welcoming you to the episode and also to share a helpful business tip for your flower business. Today I'm talking about one of my favorite subjects, which is SEO. SEO, search engine optimization, also known as Google optimization, because let's be honest, pretty much everyone uses Google, so we're always focused on how to rank in Google. I'll make this quick. I have a few tips for you that will be incredibly helpful. The reason why I love SEO, by the way, is because with a little bit of effort, maybe once a week, once a month, just working on it continuously, with a little bit of effort on SEO, you get tremendous return on your investment of time because it's free. If you make improvements to how your website can be found, Google is basically working on your behalf to help people find your business. So it's incredibly powerful. And the first thing I want to mention is unfortunately one of the easiest mistakes to make that I see a lot of new businesses make, or existing businesses, is on your website, not making it obvious what area you serve. It's amazing how many websites I look at, and it's hard to find what city they serve or what area they serve. And that's information that Google needs to understand if your business is relevant to the area of people that are searching for your business. So one of the easiest improvements you can do right off the bat is going to your website, making sure that not just in the footer, because most people have somewhere in the footer or somewhere hidden on their website, maybe the city or area they serve, but also in the header, also right at the top of your page, throughout the text of your webpage, put the city name or city names that you're serving, the area that you're serving. Put that all throughout your website. Those are signals for Google when people are searching for your business in the areas that you serve. Another thing, speaking of websites, that I always see is an image-heavy website that doesn't have enough text. Google is smart enough to read text on images, but most of the images we use as florists and flower growers are flowers, and there's no text. There's not anything that Google can understand necessarily. And if your website is image heavy and doesn't have, you know, at least two paragraphs of text on a page, then that page isn't that helpful to Google to make you found for the people searching for your business. So that's a couple of things you can do right off the bat. Make sure you list prominently the areas you serve and that your website isn't too image heavy, or if it is image heavy, you at least are putting two paragraphs of text on a page. It doesn't have to be every page, but the main pages of your site. A couple other things that I want to share with you is a tool by a service called Moz that helps you find keywords and research what keywords you should use throughout your site. Another resource I want to share with you is a Team Flower blog called How to Blog Smarter as a Floral Designer. And the reason why this is important is because if you just start your website and has pictures and details of your business and you never update your website with new blog articles, Google's going to think that your site is static and it doesn't change a lot. But if you have a blog that you're periodically posting to, and especially if those blog articles mention the cities you serve, Google's constantly going to be re-indexing your site, which helps you, be found for people in your area that are looking for your business or the services that your business offers. So there's a few easy things you can do. Obviously, it takes time, but the great benefit of SEO is that it continuously works for you. We have an upcoming class, by the way, where we're going to go in depth on these and more tips, actually sharing exactly what we do at Team Flower to make Team Flower searchable. We rank highly on a lot of floral topics. So myself and Amanda on our team, who's an expert at SEO and writing with SEO in mind, is going to be hosting a class. We'll be sharing this with you on April 12th. It will be a live class, but if you sign up, you'll also get the recordings. So teamflower.org/live is where you'll be able to sign up for this class. And it will be everything SEO, how to make your business found on Google. And it'll be a lot of fun. And we're going to share a lot of tips and answer your questions live if you decide to join live. But like I mentioned, if you don't join live, you'll still get the recording. So teamflower.org/live. That's where you'll be able to sign up for our class on SEO that's happening April 12th. So I hope to see you there, teamflower.org/live. But hope these helpful tips will improve the searchability of your business. All right, now to the interview and episode of the Team Flower Podcast.
SEO. You might have heard these three little letters used before, but maybe you aren't exactly sure how and why they pertain to your business. Simply put, search engine optimization is a key component of being found by the right customers. Hey everyone, it's Carrie with Team Flower here. Are you wondering what Team Flower is all about? Next month, on April 12th, you can participate in a one-time class at teamflower.org/live. For just $49, you can learn something new each month. Join in with other floral enthusiasts and listen to Kelly or another team member speak on a relevant topic in the industry. You can attend live and ask questions during the session. Can't be online live at that time? Not to worry. The price includes recordings and notes to follow along. On April 12th at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, join us as two of our team members, Amanda and Jesse, discuss search engine optimization, or SEO. Learn why applying SEO principles to your business can significantly improve your marketing and overall rankings. You'll learn the specific steps to do a competitive analysis for your local area. You'll take a look behind the scenes at the exact tools Team Flower uses to rank at the top of Google results for many floral topics. Register today by going over to teamflower.org/live. Join us to learn what SEO is, why it matters to the floral industry, and how to implement SEO principles into your business. Bring your questions and concerns and join us live online on April 12th at 3 p.m. by registering at teamflower.org/live. Thanks, and keep loving the world through flowers with us. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Team Flower Podcast. Today, we have Amber of Rising Hill Farm. She is in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and Rising Hill Farm is a small, sustainable cut flower farm and design studio. They offer cut flowers for the socially and environmentally conscious consumer, which is awesome. So welcome, Amber. Thanks for coming. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I would love to just start out our conversation with you just telling us a little bit more about you. Why flowers? How did you get to where you are today?
Really, just because I love flowers. I started out farming about 8 years ago, and I was doing vegetables at the time. And I do enjoy vegetable production, but I had a couple rows of cut flowers along there, and they just really worked for me. It's a lot less work than vegetables in some ways, being that you plant them once and you cut so many times with a lot of flowers. And you also don't have to wash them, which is big because washing vegetables is not really a fun job.
Oh my goodness,
And besides that, I was doing farmers markets at that time and people just gravitate towards the flowers and their faces light up in a way that they don't when they're looking at a vegetable. So, you know, I just slowly inched in that direction until I was at the point where we really only grow cut flowers. We do a little bit of vegetables for ourselves, for our family, but we don't sell them anymore.
That's awesome. Was there a particular flower that kind of just drew you that was like, oh, this is the reason why, like, this is the flower I want to grow for everyone else to enjoy?
I think originally it was zinnias because they're so prolific and they're so easy and they're also really recognizable.
Yes.
And they're bright and cheery. And now they're not actually my favorite flower, but I think they definitely pushed me in the direction of growing flowers because I realized how easy they were, what a big impact they made.
Yes. Zinnias are, oh gosh, I think they're my favorite flower. I think
Nice.
they are. Yeah, like you said, they're really prolific and they're so bright and cheery. And I love how they have they have the main flower petals, but then they have tiny little yellow flowers that circle the center, which is just so sweet and precious.
They are, and they come in such a nice range. I really like the Queen Lime series. That's the kind of zinnia that I'm very into now.
Well, gosh, we can just dive in here. Can you talk to us a little bit about like the past couple of years for you, and what has it looked like for you as a flower farmer, and how did your business navigate the changing landscape of 2020 and beyond?
Yeah, well, it was wild, like it was for everybody. I had just had a baby, so
Oh
that was
man.
already a big change. I had
Yes.
my son was 9 months old when the pandemic hit, and in the beginning, it was supposed to be like it was going to be my best year of flowers yet. I had put in all these perennials the previous fall. We had just bought our farm, so I was really excited. And then the pandemic hit, and I didn't know if I was going to be even allowed to sell them. But luckily, we got that cleared up pretty fast. Pennsylvania flowers are considered agriculture. I mean, they are agriculture, but it was covered under essential businesses. So I was allowed to keep doing business almost as usual. I mean, our markets got canceled, but I was leaning away from them at that point anyway because of my new son. And I had to do contactless, delivery and pickup and all that, like everybody else. But I'm actually okay with that. It's efficient. It's faster than it is to necessarily make contact with people every time.
Sure.
But it did end up being my best year of flowers to date. And then the next year got even better. So we've been healthily and steadily growing despite the pandemic. Maybe even in some parts because of it, because people really appreciate the beautiful things in life, especially when there's like a lot of darkness. So we had a lot of people sending flowers, during those beginning months of the pandemic when everybody was kind of afraid to go out. So that got us a lot of business. And I think people kind of focus a little bit more on local. I feel like that movement's been growing. We're in such a global situation and the pandemic made a lot of people feel like it might be nicer to stick a little closer to home.
Sure.
So it, in a lot of ways, has actually been pretty good for us. And it changed things. Like I said, the markets got canceled, but I was about ready to stop doing that anyway and to grow my business in a different way. So it did work
Sure.
out for us.
That's awesome. Man, I
Yeah.
love when there are, and I think there have been quite a few of just success stories that have come out of such an uncertain time.
Yeah.
I think it goes to show not only the resiliency of the floral industry, but also one of the, gosh, key, one of the key characteristics and traits that you have to have as a flower person is adaptability and flexibility and able to think on your feet. I mean, whether you're doing event design or whether you're growing flowers, or whether you run a shop, like you have things happen and you have to be able to figure out what the solution is. It's a,
Absolutely.
taking your business in a different direction is a little bit bigger than
Yeah.
figuring out how to substitute a focal flower for another. But regardless, it all encourages the same trait of adaptability. So I'm really glad. I'm so glad that it still ended up being your best year yet. Congratulations on that. And congratulations on growing your family too. That's exciting. That's ex so exciting.
Thank you.
Amber, I know that you are passionate about that work-life balance and running a business while also you're the primary caregiver of your young ones. And so, what are some things that you've learned along the way in that, and how would you encourage other young moms of toddlers and young children to continue to pursue their dreams and work hard and still love their children to the best of their ability.
It's definitely a balancing act, but it's a very worthwhile one. I do a lot of work when my kids are sleeping. That's big for me. I get up early during, you know, the growing season, sometimes like 4:30 or 5 o'clock. And I just take my coffee outside and I weed or do whatever I need to get done for a couple hours while they're sleeping. And I find that that's really big for me in keeping that balance and keeping it stress-free, because you can work with your children alongside you, but it can be really challenging, especially when they're little and they really need you to watch them. So I find it best to just kind of get some things done while they're sleeping. And then I can spend a few hours with them hanging out, doing what they need to, getting them breakfast. And then maybe we all go outside and I can some days get some work done. Some days I can't, but you kind of have to roll with it and not get too upset when it doesn't work out. And that's key for me, to enjoy my work and my children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. How old are your children now?
My youngest is 2.5. He'll be 3 in April. And my eldest is 12.
Okay, cool. So are there any activities that you include them in on the farm? Any that they gravitate towards? What does that kind of look like? I know there's an age gap there.
Yeah. I actually enjoy the age gap because one, my older one can play and entertain the little one. And, you know, they both have a good time doing that. But the older one, I give him tasks for money, you know, like he can earn a little spending money. Like he actually helped me put up a deer fence. If he's feeling it, he can dump mulch. He can weed. He doesn't really like to do that. But yeah, like when he feels like earning a little money, he'll come and give me some assistance, and it's a nice quality time together. We can talk and, you know, cause some farm chores are pretty tedious, you know, you can work physically and talk at the same time. So I find that to be a nice time with him, but he's also old enough that he can just do his own thing while I work. Mm-hmm. You know, he needs me a little bit, but not like the little one does. Sure. And the little one, when he was really little, I wore him in a carrier. Like you can't do that for every chore, of course, but there are certain ones where they can just cling to you, like, you know, harvesting flowers, like sunflowers it would work for because you don't have to bend over so much. But when he was a little older, still crawling around, so I didn't want him to get into things, we had like a little pack and play tent thing that he played in while I worked. And now he's all over the place, but that's really cool to see him playing. I can give him tasks like, go ahead and pick these flowers. And, you know, it's not the ones I need. He might be like really playing with the deadhead ones, but he really likes that. And he likes collecting the flowers and showing me. He's got his own little gardening set, you know, little hand tools, and he's allowed to go dig in a bed that I don't need or dig in the aisles. Mm-hmm. Worms are a good one. He loves collecting worms. He's got like his little hand tools, and then he has like various trucks and that kind of thing. So he'll fill them up with dirt and worms and make little roads to play in. You know, it helps that he really likes being outdoors, and he's been outside with me since day one. When he was really little, I'd put him in a little basket out there next to me while I worked. So he enjoys it. And, you know, sometimes he slows me down a little bit, but it's okay. He also makes me appreciate the moments, and he helps me to rest when I need to rest, which is good. And yes, then of course, that's important. Yeah. And then of course my husband is home at night. Like he works all day, but in the evenings, if I've got a lot to do, you know, we'll have dinner and then I'll go outside after dinner and work, and, you know, he'll care for the kids. So that of course is really helpful too.
Oh yes. It is great to have a teammate, especially in parenthood. And you were talking about your youngest son just loving to play in the dirt and with all the worms and everything. I don't know what it is about that age, and I'm sure that it's sensory learning and things like that, but man, they just love getting dirty, don't they?
He does. Yeah, it's one of his favorite pastimes.
I mean, the real question is, how many mouthfuls of dirt has he eaten?
Probably a lot. I mean, he pretty much gets it now. He doesn't put a lot in there now, but, you know, it happens.
Yes.
It just kind of happens when you're working out there. So
It does. Absolutely. Just building those antibodies. I'm really proud of you for just, I mean, it's hard. It's hard to be a parent, and it's hard to be a parent and also have another job in addition to that. And so I'm proud of you for continuing that and including your kids. And I believe it's really important that they're watching you chase your dreams too. And they're learning integrity and work integrity. And you're not only teaching them about flowers and how to grow things, but you're teaching them life lessons at the same time without even really trying. So
absolutely.
That's awesome. Okay. So what does it look like? Cause right now, as we're recording this, it's February, it's the off season, kind of some downtime. So what do you typically focus on, in the off season?
I mean, first and foremost, I relax a little bit because it really does feel like in the growing season, most of my time is taken up. Like I'm very, very busy. I do it all by myself with very occasional help from friends and family members, like on bigger projects. But, you know, it takes a lot of time. So in the winter, I read some books, you know, I play with the kids, I catch up with old friends, and just, you know, enjoy things. I do do dried flowers and evergreen wreaths as well. So my real downtime doesn't start until January. And then by the end of January, I am starting seeds again. So it's a short period. So I like to really take advantage of it as much as I can.
Yes.
It's interesting.
Yes, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. I think that is so great. I mean, I've seen some of the wreaths that you've made on your Instagram, and man, they're so pretty.
Thank you.
Yes, they're so pretty. I'm sure that they're quite popular with your community. Do you have any tips? Because I know that dried flowers are definitely trending right now. Do you have any tips for people who are trying to make their own wreaths or dried flower arrangements?
I mean, I would say just go with it, go with what feels right. You know, asymmetrical is really trendy right now. And so it's just being unique, using unique elements. So don't be afraid to forage. Like if you're taking a walk on your property and you see something that looks neat, like, well, make sure it's not invasive or anything like that or poisonous, but, you know, feel free to include it in what you're using.
Yeah, definitely. Good tips there. Okay. So I know that it's important to you and honestly for the earth that you run a sustainable flower farm. So what is important for a sustainable business with flowers specifically, in the farming field? No pun intended.
None taken. I mean, it really, I would say it looks different for everybody, but what it looks like for me is, a lot of handwork. You know, I don't use a lot of heavy equipment to do my work. I use a tiller to break up soil the first time, but after that, I usually just, kind of whack it up by hand with various hoes and shovels. One big thing I do is mulch. I mulch almost religiously, and that helps me to keep the weeds down. So not only does it save me a lot of labor, but it keeps it so I don't need to use herbicides or anything like that. Yeah, so mulch is big, and it, you know, it builds the soil and it conserves water and the weeds. That's huge that it stops the weeds.
So because who likes to be on their knees weeding all the time, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's unavoidable, but you know, the less time I have to spend out there weeding, the better. Yeah. And we use leaf mulch primarily because that's something, you know, that is suitable to our environment here. We have a lot of leaves in Pennsylvania, a lot of trees. So we use leaf mulch, and then we also use wood chips for between the aisles. And I get that for free or really cheap from Chip Drop. And then I also have an arborist neighbor who sometimes drops it off. And that also builds soil health as it breaks down. We get lots of worms. They like living under there. So that's great.
That is really awesome. I don't think I've ever heard of leaf mulch, and I'm not surprised that it's a thing, but
Oh yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, like if you're walking in the forest and you look at the ground below you, you see like all that rich soil that's, you know, so many years of weeds breaking down. So if you're adding that to your garden, it's wonderful.
And I mean, the other great thing about it is you're keeping those leaves out of the trash, because some people don't know what they have or don't have room to do it in their yard. And, you know, they put them out for trash pickup. But there's a lot of companies and townships, communities that'll recycle them into leaf mulch for you. So that's great, too.
Oh, what a fun fact. You have taught me something new today. Awesome. Thanks for that. So what do you do for like critters who get in your garden? I know you mentioned that you built a deer fence, but what are some sustainable ways that you can prevent either critters from getting into your garden and eating the flowers, or pests like bugs and like grasshoppers and things like that?
I mean, the deer fence is the biggest thing. Just, you know, prevention is key. So, you know, I'll go around, you know, pretty soon and just shore it up, like tie up any bits that are sagging or anything. Cause even if it sags just a little bit, like it has to be 8 feet tall really to keep them out here. And if it sags just a little bit, they might decide to jump it. So prevention is key. And then for insect pests, one thing I do is try not to grow a lot of crops that are hugely susceptible to the damage. And also, like, I do a lot of hand picking. Like, we get Japanese beetles and you just got to go through and pinch them off before they get out of control. Grasshoppers, they sometimes get the dahlias, but they kind of tend to eat their fill and then leave. We have a lot of natural areas on our farm that aren't in cultivation. We have almost 16 acres and there are fields and woodlands. So I think that helps too, just having other food sources there for them so they don't feel the need to just devour the crops that we have. Mm-hmm. That's big. And because of those natural spaces, we have natural predators. We have lots of birds, which is really helpful in getting rid of those insects that damage your crops. And I mean, we have birds of prey too, and they'll eat some of the bigger things that can do damage, like they eat rodents, voles and moles, that kind of thing. And they also chase off birds that you might not want, like sitting there eating berries and stuff. Part of where I grow is out under a power line right away. So we have a lot of hawks out there. And I think the mice and the voles and that kind of thing are scared to be out there with no cover. So we don't get too much damage out there. And then we also have a couple of barn cats and they help with rodent control too. They're huge for that.
Yes, that's great. I'm a big cat person. So the more cats, the better.
Love them. Yeah. Not only do they work, they also play, and you know, they're nice to have around.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I really appreciate that you just have mentioned just the natural landscape and how, like, what you're doing is utilizing how the natural order of things works to your advantage. And there, you know, not everyone has that opportunity, but a lot of flower farmers do. And so I'm really glad that you mentioned that. Is there a particular place where you source your seeds and bulbs and tubers? And do you save any of your own?
Yeah, there's a few different places that I source. I love Johnny's Seeds. I think they're based in Maine. And they're really great, especially when you need smaller quantities of things. And they also have really great growing guides. So I really appreciate Johnny's. Like, even when I buy something from another source, I might head over there to their website to get like a detailed plan on how to grow it, how to start the seeds. But this year I also use Geo Seeds, which is fantastic. When you need higher volume, it's a really great price. I haven't seen any company offer a better price for seeds. And then for tubers, bulbs, corms, all that stuff, I use Onings for a lot of that. And also Oregon perennials. I use them for a big order of peonies. And I also got hydrangeas from them this year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I kind of spread it out a little bit because it's, you know, cool. With all the shortages and everything going on, it's nice to not have all your eggs in one basket, as they say, you know, because containers get delayed, crops fail. So it's nice to have a hand in a few different places, but those are my go-tos, really.
Absolutely. Thanks for sharing all of those. I've definitely heard of a few. But yeah, I think that it's just really practical information, especially for those who are just starting out growing and wanting to give it a shot. And on that note, do you have any I don't know, just tips or encouragement for someone who is thinking, hey, I think I want to grow flowers.
I would say just jump into it and don't necessarily worry about selling them your first year. I mean, if you can, that's great, but there's a big learning curve. So if you've never gardened before or grown flowers, just try it out. Make sure you like it before you jump right into it, because it is very romanticized right now, which is fine, but it's a lot of work too. So you might get into it and decide you'd rather just do it for fun, which is also cool. But if you're seriously considering starting a business, I would also recommend working for another farmer. It doesn't necessarily have to be a flower farmer. You could work at a vegetable farm, because a lot of that knowledge is transferable. Just, you know, getting on a harvest schedule, you know, how to grow things. I worked on a few different farms before I started my own and had gardens for years before I decided to try to make any money off of it. But, and also just, you know, reach out to people. A lot of people are happy to share the advice and the things that they've learned, and, you know, do some reading. There's a lot of courses online. Lisa Mason Ziegler is a really good one. She offers really affordable classes, and I think she puts her information out there in like a really easy to understand way. So
yes. Yeah. We love Lisa.
Yeah,
she's great. Awesome.
Her book Cool Flowers like changed my life. It's a great resource to learn how to overwinter flowers, and it's a super easy read, you know, and I have that book out as a reference all the time. It's fantastic.
That's awesome. Such great tips. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a couple more questions as we kind of wrap up here. Okay. We know that working with flowers is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And it is also difficult. It's manual labor. There are hard things and menial tasks that have to be done. But in your work with flowers and growing them, what is something that they have taught you about life?
It's important to watch for those beautiful moments. You know, it's a lot of work to grow a flower. And once you cut it, or even on a plant, it might only last a few days or a week. But it's kind of a reflection of life, you know, it's work and it goes fast, but you should enjoy it while it's here. So I feel like it really reflects that for me.
Yes, that's so beautiful. All right. So I have one more question for you. And you mentioned a little bit before just the community aspect of the floral industry, and just how, you know, if one has questions, we shouldn't just keep them to ourselves, or don't be afraid to reach out and ask one another. Like there's so much that we can do together. So if there was one thing that you could see the floral industry rally together on, what would you want that to be?
Definitely American grown flowers, local flowers, sustainable flowers. Cause as we all know, most of the flowers in this country are imported, and the growing practices in other countries and the working conditions are oftentimes not great. I mean, some farms have it, but, you know, it can be really rough, and there's so much room for growth here. Like, I don't remember what the number is, but the flower business is so tiny in America for American grown flowers. So there's room for a lot more flower farmers in America. And I hope that this trend continues. I'm seeing a lot of florists who are really into sourcing local and who are happy with it. And that's like another kind of silver lining to the pandemic, is the supply chain issues that we've been seeing in the floral industry is forcing florists to reach out to local farms. And I think a lot of times once they use local flowers, they can really see the benefits, just that they're fresher. A lot of times they're safer, you know, they're not coated in chemicals. And
they're not wrapped in plastic.
Exactly. And they can be more affordable too, because we don't have those shipping costs built in. We all know shipping can be pretty astronomical these days too.
So absolutely.
Definitely local flower movement. I hope that, you know, that keeps building.
Yes. Yes. Me too, Amber. Me too. I totally agree with you on all of those points. And I think a lot of times too, when you're able to source your flowers locally, you're getting what is grown around you. And so for your clients, for those who are sourcing, your clients are receiving something that is natural to the land there, you know? And mm-hmm. so for brides and weddings, I always think like, oh, hey, you know, every year at this time of your wedding, like you're going to see your wedding flowers and they're going to be growing around you. And what a beautiful reminder of such an important day of your life. And, you know, for shops who are sourcing locally, you know, maybe they're creating sympathy arrangements or even just anniversary arrangements or everyday arrangements. But all of those things are special because flowers touch people in a sweet and magical way. And being able to see year after year, those same flowers that touch their heart on that date is, I think, just makes it even more magical and even sweeter. So yes, I'm with you. I'm going to rally with you on that, Amber. source locally. Oh, well, thank you so much for joining us on and sharing some of your heart, Amber. It's been lovely to chat with you.
Same. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. And for all of you who are listening, just remember that everything that you do, it matters. Every flower that you grow, every seed that you cultivate, every arrangement that you send out of your shop, and every bridal bouquet that you deliver, it has an impact on the one who is receiving it. And so keep doing what you're doing. Remember why you're doing it, and know that we're cheering you on here at Team Flower.
Thanks for listening. You can find us over at teamflower.org for more resources like this one. And while you're there, check out the Team Flower Conference. That's where we all gather to learn and grow together. It is magic. You are magic. The work that you do with flowers matters. And we are so grateful for you. Keep going. You're doing a good job.